We're gathered on this call today to talk about the adverse impact of the sequester and how that's impacted our country and our Commonwealth over the last couple of years. I've often said that the impact of sequester is bad enough, but when you consider that it's been in place for a number of years, except for a temporary lifting of it, I don't think any business or any family would do their budgeting this way in any way use this method to focus on priorities. But unfortunately, that's what's happened over the last couple of years, and one of the things we should negotiate with Republicans about is not just spending levels, but also to finally get rid of sequestration and the budget caps it imposes for forever, and do budgeting in the way that we should, which is to focus on priorities and focus on what helps us grow and make the tough decisions we should be making. The concern that I have about the sequester is exacerbated by the decisions that some are making in the Senate and the House. We have a House and Senate that have Republican majorities, so they obviously have more votes and more impact on the decisions that are made about specific programs. So I'll talk about this in two ways. One, in terms of the positive impact that these programs have, and then also be mentioning where we have specific detail about cuts to walk folks through that. If you and many of you have seen the report that we put together, the first section of that report has cuts that apply to the nation on a couple of different areas. Community development block grants, that's been cut by $920 million since 2010, so that's basically now 6 fiscal years, and that's been cut across the country by $920 million. The cops hiring program in those same 6 fiscal years cut by $160 million across the country. I'd like someone to explain to me why the country is better off by cutting $160 million from the cops hiring program. I don't think they would be able to answer that question, but I'd like to see them try. The third area, National Park Service, is $197 million in cuts over those same 6 years. So they're all national numbers, and of course some of the numbers that we'll cite will be Pennsylvania specific. But the next section walks through the dollars that are currently available in the community development block grants in Pennsylvania by county. We start with our two largest counties, Philadelphia and Allegheny County, and then go from there. And I highlight that for a couple reasons. Number one is community development block grants are one of the few areas of our budget, the federal budget, where Washington can say that that we're providing direct help to local communities. There's no intermediary. It doesn't go through in every case state government. Sometimes the state has a role to play, but this is one of the areas where the federal government can provide direct support for local communities. And I've often heard a lot of politicians in Washington lament too much federal control of things and not enough local control. And local communities can make better decisions than Washington, and local taxpayers can make better decisions than folks in Washington. And I've heard all those arguments for years, and often the same people making those arguments are the same people voting year after year after year for cuts to community development block grants. So I think if you're voting year after year to cut community development block grants, and as we noted before, cutting it by $920 million over 6 fiscal years, I think you got to look in the mirror and say, how can I preach about local control? How can I preach about local decisions? And then cut the one program, one of the few programs, where the federal government gives local communities the dollars and they can decide what to do. So that's on the negative side. Let's get a little positive here. Just a couple of examples of what CDBG means. It's not just some program and money moving around. Here's three examples. There are two good examples. I'll give you that. Philadelphia, CDBG funding was used to stem the foreclosure crisis by helping nearly 4,000 homeowners avoid foreclosure through the housing counseling dollars funded by CDBG. Prior to funding cuts, CDBG funding was responsible for annually creating 2,818 jobs in Philadelphia. So whether you measure it by jobs, in this one example, one city in our biggest city, or whether you measure it by foreclosure avoidance, 4,000 homeowners, it's an example of what CDBG can mean to a local community. Another example, Allentown. CDBG allowed over 700 properties to be inspected to ensure health and safety over the past 3 years, a vitally important priority for local communities to have properties inspected. That's what CDBG can do. And in other communities across the state, whether it's bolstering existing housing stock or reconstructing streets, improving water infrastructure, whatever that community wants to do with those dollars, with very, very limited limitations, they can invest in those priorities. So in some communities, it might be law enforcement or bolstering their housing stock, and other places it might be job creation. Whatever it is, they get to decide, not Washington. And one of the adverse impacts of Republican budgets, as well as sequestration, has been the limited, much more limited opportunities local communities have to invest as they want to invest, as opposed to what Washington will want. And here's the overall number for Pennsylvania. Just between 2010 and 2014, we went from $236 million in CDBG funding to $171 million. So for the dollars that we lose there, the tens of millions of dollars that we're losing over the course of 4 or 5 years, I don't see how our state is better off by losing those dollars and by losing those opportunities for local communities to invest as they see fit. So I hope our friends who want to slash this program year after year would just make a little suggestion to them. Look in the mirror and just say, have what I've been preaching about local control, does that match with my voting record? Maybe they can answer that question. I await their answer. The next area, by way of example, is Head Start. 22,600 kids in Pennsylvania would not receive full Head Start services needed to succeed in school if we go in the direction that some want us to go with regard to the Republican budgets, or appropriations, I should say, is the more accurate word. Or by keeping in place sequester. There actually are members of Congress, it's hard to believe this, but there actually are members of Congress who think we should keep sequestration in place. They like it. They embrace it. They think it's good policy. I will never understand that point of view, but there are some who want sequestration in place because they must like across the board indiscriminate cuts, which, as I said, no family and certainly no successful business would employ. But when you have sequestration in place and you do the kind of budgeting and appropriations that some want to do, kids lose their Head Start opportunities. 10,000 kids who are eligible for the Head Start program may not be able to participate. And you all know the studies that I've cited over and over again. You spend a buck and you get, by one study, $10 in return or $17. So the bang for the buck on Head Start is not just documented, but I think irrefutable. And I would argue CDBG has a great bang for the buck as well. Another example, Social Security Administration. We don't hear about this much. Cuts to funding for Social Security Administration would negatively impact the 56 offices across our state, which leads to longer wait times and reduced hours of service. And in the report that we have sent to everyone on the call, that that map outlines where those offices are. I think you go to any House or Senate office, and other than veterans issues and a few other issues, Social Security calls are among the highest number of calls that we get. Cutting funding for those offices would make those calls increase and make it more difficult for people to get answers to their questions. The next area is the cops hiring program that I mentioned before. That's been cut by $160 million since fiscal year 2010. And again, I'd like to ask folks, how is the country better off by cutting $160 million for the cops program? This is another area where you have a lot of politicians that preach about helping law enforcement, and then when it comes to the one thing they can do to help law enforcement, because speeches are nice, but they don't really help. Press releases are nice, but they don't help too much. The one way that Washington can help law enforcement and our police officers very specifically is the cops hiring program. And it's been cut and cut and cut and cut. So we know that, for example, the program helped to hire, nearly 50 officers in 2010 in Pennsylvania prior to the sequestration, compared to only 22 officers in 2014. So again, I'll ask the same question. How is Pennsylvania better off when we only hire 22 police officers through the cops hiring program as opposed to hiring 50? I think we're a lot worse off. I'll answer my own question. But I'd like to hear the answer from some of the folks in Washington who apparently have a different point of view on how to help law enforcement. Allentown, Johnstown, Pittsburgh are among the communities benefiting from the cops hiring program in 2014. And when we're on this call next year, I hope I can say Allentown, Johnstown, Pittsburgh, and then be able to say more instead of limiting it to just three communities. Homestead, for example, a smaller community, a borough, they're going to be helped, as you can see from the chart. Over the last couple of years, the city of Bethlehem, Lewistown, New Sewickley, Stroud area, Aliquippa, Chester, Philly, Pittsburgh, Scranton. You go down the list, in cities and boroughs across our state have been helped by the COPS program, but that number has gone down in the last couple of years because folks have a rather strange approach to law enforcement. Apparently some people believe you help them by not helping them, if I can be so cynical as to say it that way. The National Park Service, cuts the National Park Service would hinder repairs and construction at 9 sites across the Commonwealth. And we have that map again, which highlights on the chart not only the Social Security offices, but as you can see the pins and you can get more information on each national park site. So that's another example of why these cuts are adversely impacting our state. And then finally, let me just give you two more. The National Science Foundation in Pennsylvania in 2014. We received National Science Foundation awards that supported 4,010 researchers and scientists, and this amount would decrease in the absence of a budget agreement. One study indicated that you spend a buck, and I'm repeating myself, but it also applies here, spend a buck on public basic science funding, and you get $3.15 in pharmaceutical investment return. So I think that's self-evident. We know the impact that the National Science Foundation has had on our country over not just years, but literally generations now. So it's about time we stopped allowing people in Washington to play games with the budget itself or appropriations and to sit down and to negotiate budgets that make a lot more sense, focus on our priorities, and also finally get rid of sequestration once and for all. Because this isn't just a debate about numbers and budgets and programs. It really gets down to basic priorities like kids in their future, medical research, and our ability to not just to out-research the world, but to lead, you know, to do the kind of research that leads to cures and treatment and better strategies to grow our economy and so many other benefits of research, medical research, and otherwise. It's also about law enforcement. If you're serious about law enforcement and you're a federal member, you're a federal elected official, member of Congress, you have to focus on resources for local law enforcement. And then finally, it's about local communities. We have a state that is, other than a few big cities, very much decentralized. We have a lot of small towns. We have the largest number, except maybe Illinois, of local communities in the country. And those communities should be able to make some decisions on their own, whether they want to use federal money for paving a road or investing in a job creation strategy, or whether they want to use it to help their housing market and help folks with housing, or whether they want to use it for some other purpose. They should be able to do it without Washington telling them what to do. So these are all priorities. And let me highlight one more, and then I'll stop. The House Appropriations bill recently cut veterans' health care. So here's what it means. When you cut VA medical care, here are the people that are adversely impacted. I can't quantify the impact, but I know that in Pennsylvania in 2014, 234,100 veterans were relying upon VA for health care. I don't know if that cut by the House Appropriations Committee affected one of the 234,100 or 100 of them. We don't know for sure. But if that cut affected one veteran, a single veteran, we've got to ask ourselves, does that make sense? And again, I hear a lot of politicians in Washington that say how important it is to make sure we never take steps that adversely impact veterans, that we have to provide better care for veterans, that we have to be more responsive to the needs of veterans and their families. I agree with all that, but you can't just talk. You got to act. And when you're acting in an adverse way, then you have some explaining to do. If there's another way to help veterans in their health care, I'm all ears. I want to hear it. If there's another way to help them, I'd love to hear that. But you can't just talk a good game and then cut, preach and not deliver. So I would hope that folks who have been talking about these issues for a long time would have their actions match their rhetoric and work with people in both parties to not just do the right thing when it comes to our budget policy and our appropriations policy, but to sit down with folks in both parties and negotiate better appropriation bills, as well as get rid of the indiscriminate cutting and the adverse impact of sequestration. So that's all I have for today. So I'd like to take your questions.
From 69 News in Allentown.
Yes.
I was just wondering, how is the sequestration going to affect Lehigh County, like the Allentown area? I know you broke it down in the report county by county, but can you explain a little bit?
Yeah, and if we can get more specific detail on county,
maybe,
you know, the address.
Maybe when it comes to the cops hiring program and things that you touched upon.
Yeah, well, you give an example. You see in the report, in the year-by-year listing of various communities that get COPS funding. So in 2010, Allentown Police Department got more than $2.2 million. They could hire 10 police officers with that. 2011, they got the same number, a little bit higher, same number of cops hired, a little bit higher in terms of the dollars. And then they're also in the 2014 five police officers. So you can see the impact that way. We can't be specific. I can't tell you that because of X cut that there'll be X number of fewer police officers hired in Allentown. But you can see over time, part of the problem is if this persists over time, not just this year, but if we keep going in the direction some want us to go in, it won't just be Allentown. There'll be communities all over our state that will have little to no opportunity to hire more police officers. And I think that's not the direction we want to go in. But if we can get more detail about CDBG or COPS or research or anything else that's Allentown or Lehigh County specific, we'll get that for you.
Thank you.
Senator Boris Crouch, when you look at the Scranton Times, this is kind of late, isn't it? I mean, to be start talking about this, is there any real movement toward eliminating the sequestration limits as part of the whatever they come up with by September 30th? And I'm not faulting you. I'm just saying that we're down to 2 weeks here.
So you don't often want to be called a persistent critic, but I think on sequestration that label fits me. But no, look, it's the right time now, but it's also the right time 6 months ago and years ago, and I've been making this point for years. But the reason we're making the point now is because we're only days now from the end of the fiscal year. We have to make decisions about that. And if we go beyond September 30th, the problem doesn't go away. We still have the problem. So I'm making the point because of where we are in the fiscal year, but also we're going to be wrestling with these appropriations issues between now and the end of the year as well. So it's everyone's back to work. It's a good time to be sounding the alarm, but you're going to hear from us a number of times between now and the end of the year. I'd like, Boris, to be able to say to you that by the September 30, that every appropriation bill will be worked out and agreed upon, but I'm afraid that's probably not going to happen. So we've got kind of two deadlines, the end of the fiscal year and then some other deadline after that, depending on what's worked out as a...
Is there any sense that anyone in Congress, is there enough support for eliminating the sequestration limits that this might happen? Can you tell that person to shut up?
Someone needs to mute their phone. I don't know who that is, but... No, Boris, I don't have an accurate sense of that because I just don't have a vote count. But here's the basic problem. When I talk to most Republicans, or you hear what they say on their own, even apart from just private discussions, a lot of Republicans have expressed the same kind of opposition to or concern about sequestration, but usually and almost exclusively in the context of defense. I agree with them. It's bad for defense, too. But it's also really bad for non-defense. I mean, you can't just say, well, defense is more important than police officers and defense is more important than veterans or defense is more important than medical research. These are all priorities, and I think we have to get rid of it for both defense and non-defense. If we do that, well, it'll be a measure of progress. It doesn't solve all our problems because you'll still have folks with or without sequestration, recommending cuts that I wouldn't agree with, but the sequestration problem is a big part of this discussion. Must be, I think.
Senator Elaine from KQV Radio in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
A couple quick clarification. How long has sequestration been in effect, and what is the percentage again across the board? If there's no budget in place, the cuts go into effect.
Well, sequestration has been in effect since the 2010 fiscal year, so basically 6 years, but 2 years of that were, I want to make sure I'm right about this, Jack, 2 years of that were lifted. Yeah, so in effect for 6 years, yeah, so it partially rolled back. So basically 6 fiscal years, a partial rollback of sequestration for two of those. But over 6 years, you can obviously see the damage it's done to the COPS program or CDBG. And then, Elaine, the other question you had was about overall percentage?
Yeah, is there a formula? I'm sorry, I can't remember. How does it work?
Well, the problem is it's an across the board cut, and that leads to that leads to problems in both sides of the budget, the so-called discretionary non-defense, and then also the defense side as well. But I'll try to get for you, if we can, an overall number that might explain it better. I don't, in my remarks, I didn't cite a specific percentage reduction, but we can get that around to folks if we can get the right number. But part of the issue, or part of this is, what's the kind of, if we stay on the course that we're on, give you an example. The cap for 2016, meaning the fiscal year that would start October 1, for that fiscal year ahead of us, the non-defense cap is only $1.1 billion. That happens to be 0.2 percentage points higher than what was enacted in this year that we're in. We're still in the fiscal 2015 year until September 30th. But when you do the math on that cap for the fiscal year ahead of us, it's really a difference of $9 billion lower than the 2015 level when you consider inflation and other factors. So sometimes people say, well, it'll be level funding or something close to that is fine. But you can see the difference when you add inflation and other factors. In this case, $1.1 billion for non-defense would actually be a $9 billion reduction, just at a time when we need to be making investments in these priorities. So that's, and I'll we'll try to send some more detail about that to folks so you have a sense of it. And by the way, and many of you know this from covering the federal appropriations process over time, this part of the budget, the so-called discretionary non-defense, is a very small part of overall federal spending. It's maybe 15%. It's in that range. So the cuts are even more substantial, or the cuts are disproportionately damaging or adverse. We're not talking about the huge percent of federal spending that's mandatory, and we're not talking about discretionary defense. We're talking about discretionary non-defense. So in that tiny part of the overall federal spending, the cutting has been devastating, absolutely devastating. And the reason the cuts have been in place is because of sequestration and because it is that word that I use, discretionary. So they're members of Congress, our votes year after year have an impact on that part of the budget because we get to cast a vote and decide what spending levels should be. So you're talking about kind of a, I would call it a meat axe being taken to a part of the budget which is a rather, or a part of the federal spending which is rather small of the overall spending. It's not, it's in that, 80 or not in the 80% or 85% of the spending that people think of. It's in that small, much smaller corner of federal spending, and that's why it's so important that we fight hard to get these investments.
Tim Stuhlgerer from LNP, Lancaster newspaper.
Yes.
Looking for one clarification on the National Science Foundation grants.
Yes.
I think I should add three zeros to these numbers. So, for
Oh, in
example,
the
Mosville
chart.
University would be $817,000 in grants.
That's correct. Let me go to that. So we talk about Pennsylvania, 275.
That would be then a million.
Million, right.
Okay.
So which one? You said Drexel?
Millersville, but yeah, as long as I'm adding
Oh, I'm
three
sorry,
zeros to all of
Millersville.
these guys.
Yeah, so Millersville, let me see if I know my alphabet here. The 817,000.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not $817, $817,000. And the next the next column, the abbreviated CNT, and that's count, right? That's the number of grants. Yeah.
Okay,
so Milledgeville got 5 grants, and across the state.
So you referred to the number of researchers that is not represented on this chart.
Number of research grants.
Okay.
In the 2014 fiscal year.
Which okay, yeah, in your comments you referred to 4,010 researchers and scientists, but there's no further breakdown of that then?
No.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Are we right about that, Jack? No further breakdown. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
And, of course, because it's fiscal year 14, we're actually talking about the year we're not in. We're in 15 now, so that would be...
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm wondering if you could make a couple of comments on... You know, what you would like to see, you referred to these cuts, you know, hitting a small part of the federal budget.
Yeah.
Do you see a need to bring the federal budget into better balance, and how would you propose doing that?
Well, certainly, when you get to this part of the budget, I mentioned the $1.1 billion range. I mean, trying to come up with a bipartisan compromise that makes sense. I mean, I realize that, you know, what I would like to invest in the COPS program or in CD, you know, block grants for communities or otherwise, I may not get the number I would want, but something that makes more sense. And frankly, if you're going to cut funding for the COPS hiring program, you ought to have to justify it. That's one of the frustrations I have is, if there's some study or some analysis that shows that these police departments don't need the funding or they shouldn't, I mean, I'm open to arguments, but I don't have a specific number in mind, but these kinds of increases that or at least stop it. First thing you got to do is stop the cuts before you can even dream about increases. So I'm in the
The major drivers are in the mandatory spending, or maybe we're spending too much on defense. Like, where do you see the government not spending money and not getting bang for its buck?
Well, I'd say overall, it would be better for the country if Democrats and Republicans came together not just to work on better appropriations for the year-to-year $1 billion plus discretionary non-defense part of the budget, but overall, we have long-term challenges in the other 80-85% of federal spending that we don't have enough consensus on in terms of being able to control costs. And part of that is the question of revenues as well. That's why tax reform is unfinished business. That's why a lot of what hasn't happened in Washington is having an impact. Short term and long term. These things we outlined today are very near term challenges, but obviously we still have longer term issues as well.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay, everybody. One more question. Is there one more? We just have time for one more, I think.
Okay, everyone. Well, we'll follow up with some of those numbers, and if we as much detail as we can send you, we will. But thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.